Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh my God, it's early.
Joining me from the Northern Plains, where the temperatures are falling, is the All Marine Radio head chef. He's not happy though, just so everybody knows. He got something snipped off his ear. He walking around, one of his antlers is damaged. He's not happy about it. So we're gonna do a little therapy today. How big is the bandage on your ear?
Oh, I took the big one off that pretty much covered my ear. I've got it down to one, piece of, gauze and one band-aid, you know, normal band-aid size.
Okay.
So I'm okay. I can go out in public today.
Is your hair gonna cover it?
Oh, hell no. I just got a haircut yesterday. I got a buzz cut. I'm at a number one on your speed dial.
that's not going to help. Just so you know.
No, no, it's called a stocking cap.
Yes,
and we're getting close to that. But I'm still in shorts today.
You are. What's the temperature? It was down in the 30s. It's like 37 this morning in Montana.
Yeah, it's in the 40s, upper 40s. It'll be a high of in the upper 50s. Today,
yikes.
Which is perfect. At least it's not below freezing. That's, you know, that's when the butch comes out, when it jumps below 32. But the super butch comes out when it goes for a month under zero.
When you get below,
that song.
Yeah, 10 degrees above zero is when you bust it out. But anyway, you guys aren't there yet, so and you know it's awful early to get, you know, sometimes in the Northern Plains. I mean, you get summer comes back in September, and so you never quite know. September's one of those months, a lot of places around the country, where you got a big question mark, like what's going to happen here.
Yeah, well, September is pretty much in the 50s around here. October, you can be playing golf on Halloween, or it could be a half a foot of snow on the ground. October is a transition month towards the end there. You just don't know.
All right.
We're doing good weather-wise. We're doing just fine. I got no complaints with the weather.
Okay. All right. Yeah, looking around the country after watching, you and I were talking about it last week, but after watching Hurricane Florence, you see those people. A friend of mine is one of the commanding generals in North Carolina at our base there. And you look at the pictures of what's happened to the infrastructure, and those repairs are not 3 week repairs. You know, that bridge, you know, that road repair, that bridge repair, those are going to take months, you know, if not a year to do. And that's when after they get started, and they're not going to get started for a while. So it's a ways back. And then the other thing, and you can speak to this, Kim, you know, a business district stands up. Now you've got all that infrastructure damage, right? So somebody at the county or whatever, as the county begins to put itself back together, says, look, this road's out, this road's out, this road's out. We can put a temporary bridge on one of them. Which one do we choose? Well, it should be that one. Okay. all the businesses that relied on those other two roads to bring traffic into the area, guess what happens to them?
Dead.
Yeah, they're dead.
DOA.
Yeah, and so you see these, you know, it's there's all these second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth order events that happen that are associated with these weather incidences that are just horrible. So, just horrible. So, anyway.
And that, the floods, I mean, I just saw on the news the other day where one town was totally flooded last year. Now it's totally flooded this year. I mean, it just gives you pause. How much is living near the water worth it?
You know,
living
what?
On the ocean.
Yeah, living in the river, living, you know.
Here's
a thought for you. Okay, we haven't even got to the number of stories you're going to see on the news about people who don't have flood insurance.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Right? Right. And so.
Remember that.
Well, I think that there ought to be a catastrophic rider that's mandatory for every mortgage initiated in the country. And everybody pays, I don't know, whatever it would take, a buck or two or $5 a month on your mortgage, and everybody in the country is covered for tornadoes, hurricanes, and earthquakes. And because that ought to be...
And in the case of California and, fires.
Right.
Wildfires.
Yeah, throw fires in there. Because it's just, you see this stuff, and if you don't have that coverage...
You're screwed.
Yeah, you're screwed.
Well, I don't know if your listeners know, but I had my insurance guy come in to my office at the original Sanders before the flood of 97 and said, write me a check for $1,300. You're going to need flood insurance this year. I said, come on, man. Yeah. Look how high I'm at, 52 feet. Above the flood stage, and that's not going to be a problem. He says, I've lived here my whole life. We've had 6 blizzards so far, or 4 or 5 blizzards. There were 8 that year. And I want a check. I'm not leaving until I get a check. I don't have the money in the bank. He says, write me the goddamn check, and don't worry about it. Just I need your signature on a check. So I handed him a blank check. I filled it out and said, just don't cash it. He says, don't worry. Well, out of the 50,000 people that got flooded in Grand Forks, there were 1,000 of us that had flood insurance. And had I not, had him bug me and force me to write that check, we wouldn't be talking today because I don't know where I would be. That flood insurance saved my life. So I agree with you, Mac. That's a great idea. The mandatory pay for a national
national program. And then the insurance companies just show up and start writing checks. Everybody gets it. And for those of you who've heard us talk about this before, but you know, and it weighs heavily on the elderly because they can't assume any more debt. It's one thing when you're in your 20s and FEMA comes around and they offer low interest loans in the wake of a disaster. You know, you can suck it up and you can make ends meet and you can take out, you know, a low interest loan. But there's no grants coming, and so you're gonna go further into debt. Well, you can do that when you're in your 20s or 30s or 40s. And you can, you know, over the course of time, you'll deal with it. When you're retired, when you're in your 60s or your 70s or your 80s, then what?
Yeah. Even your 50s, some people might have some kind of health issues. But that's a great, great idea, Matt. That makes so much sense.
I wonder why I'm not a Mensa or anything like that. So I wonder why we don't do it. Why? What's the case for not having it? Because the people in Kansas don't want to pay for, you know, hurricane relief on the coast or earthquake relief or the people in California, they don't want to pay. I don't know. How much money would it take? How do you create the fund, and how much money does it take to keep it rolling on an annual basis? But with all the mortgages, out there, I think you could probably start that thing up and make a case for it.
You could add $5 or $10 a month to your mortgage,
right,
for a national health, a national disaster relief fund, as long as the money went into the national relief fund.
Didn't go someplace else. No kidding. It's called the lockbox. Social Security, maybe not. The question would be, though, how much money would it take? Because these bills are humongous. Would it be $5 or $10 a month? Is that all it would be?
I need somebody a lot smarter than me to figure that one out.
But right. And
whatever is kicked in to the kitty would still help.
Right. Well, and even if the federal government then turns around and says, look, we will make up the difference in that fund for whatever hits.
Yeah.
So we're going to become partners with American mortgage holders and business owners that, you know, that pay into this fund. You'll all be covered, right? You will all be covered, but we're going to spread the risk over the nation, and so maybe I should.
That's a spectacular idea.
Maybe I should pursue that.
I think maybe you should.
Maybe. All right, here's a question. I have a food question, if I can interrupt the flood discussion here.
Yes, you can. I'd love it, please.
Yeah, you know, but again, you see just the different stories that are coming out now in the aftermath of, and it's just started. It's just started, and it's just, the floods are awful. Floods and, you know, tornadoes tend to be pretty small in comparison with the damage that a flood does. And again, flood gets your infrastructure. You know, you've got to take your home down to the 2x4s and rebuild it. It sucks. Here's the question. A couple weeks ago, the chef talked about breakfast. I want to say he had a place called the Blue something or other.
The Blue Parrot.
There you go, the Blue Parrot.
Blue Parrot Breakfast Club, I called it. And we just did breakfast 6 days a week from 7 to 2.
7 to 2 in the morning.
Yeah, we were closed Mondays.
All right, which is because he did that, we've never spoken about breakfast except exceptionally. Okay, so the email asks this: could he talk about his favorite omelets to make and any key pointers he has for omelets? You guys talked about a lot of things during the course of it. I'm a huge omelet fan. I grew up eating them. My mother, for whatever reason, used to like to make them. I'd be curious to hear if the chef has any tips relative to the omelet and how to make great omelets.
Well, there's several ways to make an omelet. I usually use 3 eggs. Some people like to put a little dash of cream. That just extends it. I don't. I just take the 3 eggs and whip them up so everything's blended. The egg should be as close to room temperature as possible, not just out of the fridge.
Why?
Because the heat takes longer to cook the egg, and you want the egg to cook, but you try to avoid getting the outer part of the omelet too brown. If you have the touch, and this takes practice,
okay,
and a medium high temperature on your omelet, I say we're going to do a Western omelet. Okay. That's ham, diced ham. That's bell peppers, red, green. Some people will throw jalapenos in there.
Right.
And then there's a cheddar cheese in the middle. Now, what I did with my omelets was I put the ham and the peppers in the pan with clarified butter, and you sauteed it to get them heated through and cooked a little bit, the peppers and onions. Yes, don't forget onions in the West. And then I add the eggs, and then I have a flat spatula, rubber. And as the eggs start to bubble up on the outside, I push that eggs in the middle, so a raw egg full goes out to the outside, and the first time, and then I lift, then when it starts to bubble again, I lift the edge up and let the egg tilt the pan and let it go underneath the cooked egg, and you do that around the pan, and then you still will have a little high pro glow, a little kind of raw egg. It's warm, but you get that to the sides as much as possible without breaking the bottom of the omelet. And then when you're ready to flip, I use a 9-inch
saute pan. Wait a minute. Why are we flipping the omelet?
Because I'm about ready to put the cheese in and flip it and cook it. I've cooked it. I just told you the method.
Okay, hold on. Then let me understand. So when you say flip it, you mean fold it over?
Fold it over, yes.
Okay, all right. Just checking. I thought I was missing something there.
Yeah. You're not going to have to flip the whole thing over.
Okay,
because you'd have egg all over your kitchen.
Unless you were a pro. Okay, so the things you...
I can do that. I can do that, but most customers... most people cannot.
Okay.
Unless they have a lot of omelet experience.
Okay, so what you talk about, the folding process gets the liquid part of the egg that's sitting on top of the omelet, gets that to a place where...
It gets folded over. It's like a crescent moon. You have a full moon. You put the cheese, say you got the handle, and you're holding it, and you're jiggling it, and the
right.
omelet should slide
right.
from the clarified butter underneath. It
right.
should slide.
Right.
And so you put the cheese from one side to the other on the bottom half of the omelet that closest to the handle.
Okay.
And then you're going to flip the part that is away from you, and you do it in a motion that is, you push, after the cheese is in there, you push the egg, the moon towards the outer edge, and then in one motion, you have your spatula underneath, you lift it up, and then when you bring it down, you flip it over.
Yeah, that's too complicated. You don't explain that very well. So you got to fold it over, however you do it.
Yes, you fold it over.
Yeah, you fold it over.
And then you have a crescent,
right.
It should, if you do it properly, it'll be a half moon.
Okay, now, hold on. You said something that it was confusing. When you first put the eggs in, right, and you're cooking it, in those initial folds, you're trying to get the liquid out of the top center of the omelet as it lays there flat cooking, and you're trying to get that off to the side so you don't have to scorch the bottom in order to have it cooked all the way, right?
Right. You're doing is when the omelet cooks, you get these kind of, the egg forms a solid around the edge. You pull that towards the center, and the raw egg will run to where that one egg is.
Got it.
You still have your circle, but you're trying to get egg underneath in the bottom of the omelet. So it drains from the top. You lift up the side and let the egg kind of go under. You got to tilt the omelet pan. If we had a video show, I could show you immediately, but we don't. So
we should
my explanation is not that good, but I'll do my best.
No. People understand, because if you don't do that, the only way that it cooks is, and again, depending on the temperature that you're cooking at. So what temperature am I cooking this at on the stove?
Well, when I was at the restaurant at the Blue Parrot, I just had it pretty much on high.
Ooh.
An amateur should probably do it medium high.
Okay.
So, because they're not moving as fast as I move.
Got it.
And you need a little more time.
Got it.
So you don't want to burn the eggs.
Yeah.
On a Sunday or a Saturday brunch, I would break myself at least 30 dozen eggs.
30 dozen
eggs.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
100. Yeah, that's a lot of eggs, man. And it's not all omelets. Sometimes it's special scrams. Right, sometimes right.
We're not talking about that though. We're only talking omelets today.
I know we are. I had special pans for omelet.
Okay.
I
can tell you're about to get sidetracked, this is where I got to interject myself. Here's another email. Mac, how long does it take to go ahead and warm up your eggs if I take them out of the refrigerator? How long does it take for an egg?
Well, if you get up in the morning, you take out a dozen eggs and you sit them on the counter. You know, folks, you do not have to refrigerate the eggs as long as they're not sitting in the sun. Where I worked in Italy, they had a flat of eggs that's 2.5 dozen is a flat, just sitting out 24/7 on the counter. So, and some people will take their eggs out of the carton and sit them in a little bowl of glass or ceramic bowl on the countertop in the shade, just so it doesn't get direct sun. But just take them out in the morning when you get up. And if it's a half an hour or an hour before breakfast, or you're going to church and having breakfast when you come home, it's not going to hurt you. You're not going to get salmonella. That's not how they do eggs anymore. So you would be okay.
Okay.
It's a little tip that most people don't know. And if the eggs are more at room temperature, same like when we cook meats or whatever, if it's at room temperature, it cooks better and you don't have to spend all that time cooking the outside to get the inside warm and it's ice cold. That's all. You don't need to. It's not necessary. You can pull them out of the fridge and whip up an omelet or whatever you want to do. But if you're making, you want to try and make the perfect omelet, that's the ticket.
All right, here's another one. What about his favorite ingredients? Okay, now I know you struggle with this part of the program. So it's not like all the different things you can do. What are your favorite ingredients for an omelet?
My favorite ingredient for an omelet is mushrooms,
okay,
onions,
okay,
and cream cheese.
That's it?
That's it.
No bacon?
Salt and pepper the eggs.
Come on.
You whip them up. Then you saute your onions because they take longer.
That's a bullshit omelet without any broken up bacon in it? Come on, man.
Just a minute, man. Where I had that for the first time was in a Jewish dairy restaurant, which does not serve meat, in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, back in the late 60s.
Okay.
And I had that. I never had cream cheese in an omelet.
Okay.
and I just went gaga over it. Yep. However,
you went bonkers.
However, yes, in recent years, okay, until I married Beth, and she wouldn't let me eat bacon anymore, I would take bacon and I would crumble it up, and then I would do the same procedure. A lot of times I like to cook the bacon raw, and so some of that bacon fat is in with the egg when I pour the omelet in. I don't drain that. But you saute your onions. You start with your chopped up bacon raw.
Oh.
And you cook that, and then you, when it's half cooked, then you throw your onions and your mushrooms in, and that will suck up some of that excess grease. And maybe just before you throw your eggs in,
yes,
and you throw an ounce of butter in, and gives it that little extra high pro glow on your omelet. And then
now we're talking. This is the chef that I know and love. Okay, because we're talking fat man food right now.
Okay, then you have a piece of cream cheese. For me, cream cheese I can still eat. That's one of the cheeses that's not, doesn't hurt me, doesn't have a lot of sodium in it. And I love cream cheese, as you know.
And sodium.
And you preform this cream cheese into like a little mini log. Okay. It's like, a thick, like the size of Rolos, a packet of Rolos.
Okay. Yeah.
If you're hip to that.
Everybody knows I like
cream cheese, but you can't put that in the middle of the omelet before you flip it. You put it in halfway between the middle and your handle towards you. Okay. So the egg flips over, and believe me, it'll still melt throughout. And if it's kind of at room temperature, you bite into that and you get a chunk of that cream cheese with the bacon and mushrooms and onions, you are in the front row. Hello, hello.
Good morning. That is
my favorite omelet, but I got there first with the mushroom, onion, and cream cheese on it.
Wow.
Okay.
I knew there was something amiss when there was no bacon in that omelet. So
there isn't anymore, but there sure used to be.
There sure used to be. But I love the way that you cook everything else so you don't take your everyday bacon that you would have cooked and maybe have it in the refrigerator and you pull it out, you cut it up and you throw it in. You don't do it that way. You actually saute everything in the bacon and then that beautiful bacon taste that we all know and love.
And the bacon fat, which sucks into the onion and the mushrooms, you still get the onion and mushroom flavor, but it's always has a little bit of bacon fat in there, and nothing wrong with bacon fat.
It's bacon.
Except cholesterol levels.
It's baconized, all right? It is baconized. That sounds like a good deal, man. That sounds like a good deal. Omelets, I did not, I grew up eating scrambled eggs. Kathleen did not make omelets for us as kids. And then I discovered them and all the different things that you could put in them. It was a big treat in our family if my grandmother used to make scrambled eggs with diced ham that she would throw in there. I thought that was incredible. Then my mother used to make, as she advanced her breakfast skills, she used to make a flan. What is a flan? It's got bread in it, right?
A flan is like a custard. A flan is a Mexican creme caramel is the best way to describe it. Instead, a flan has milk instead of cream.
So my mother's flan would, or this concoction she made, it would be eggs, bread, and then she would throw all this other stuff in it as well.
And then she'd bake it in the oven.
Exactly. Cover it with cheese, bake it in the oven. Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. And, you know, onions, sautéed onions, bacon, whatever she put in there, it was delicious. Absolutely, positively delicious. So I became a fan of the flan.
Can I interject something here?
Of course you can, Pumpkin.
Okay, you can do that if you say you're having a brunch.
Yes.
After church.
Okay.
Okay, you can make this up. You get chunks of bread. You know, go buy a loaf of bread that hasn't been sliced, and cut thick slices, and then tear those slices up and sit them in a bowl in the afternoon. Then at night you grease a 11 baking dish, and you butter it or Crisco it, whatever you want to do. Then you mix your eggs up, your scrambled eggs. You have whatever ingredients you have. If you're going to put bacon or sausage, it has to be cooked. But otherwise, nothing else has to be cooked. And you throw that bread in there. Then you throw a little cheese in. And then you put your egg mixture on top of everything that's in there. You cover it and refrigerate it overnight.
Ooh, why? I thought we didn't like refrigeration. Well,
let me just listen. And that bread, it's kind of stale bread, soaks up all the juice from the eggs. And then you bake it at 350 or 30 to 40 minutes, depends, until it's golden brown in the middle of the oven. But just before you put it in the oven, then you sprinkle a whole bunch of your favorite cheese on top. And then you bake it. And that, then you'll get what Kathleen used to get, without doing it overnight. But I've done it for the restaurant overnight, an egg baked dish is how I called it. And I could do that. And then I would cut squares out and serve it and keep it warm in the off-the-sham, the warming oven.
Right.
And I cut squares out and then serve it with the salsa.
Oh.
And
hello.
And home fried potatoes.
Ugh.
So how about that, big shooter?
Yeah, boo-boo. That's why he's that's why he's the chef, and that's also why we've never talked about breakfast, because we're smart. Hold on. I've got a couple other emails. Not sure why I'm making up words today in the English language, but I am. Mac, as I salivate here listening to you guys discuss flan and omelets, I have a question about making fluffy pancakes. What's the secret of making fluffy pancakes? Is there a certain mix the chef used? Is there an ingredient to add to it? Is it the way you cook it? What makes light, fluffy pancakes?
Well, a little teaspoon of baking powder and baking soda. A teaspoon, not a table, but a little teaspoon in a big batter. And that batter can also be made the night before. And that has to be your choice. You can use a box mix. If you go to the store and read on the pancake mix, you'll see the baking soda and baking powder is already in there. So all you have to do is add milk or whatever. I always like whole milk, when I do pancakes. I don't like the skim stuff. They're too watery, just too wimpy. And then you could do that, and then when you throw them on the griddle, you don't make the pancakes too big. You make them about 4 to 6 inches across and on one side. And when you do that, you have, if you want to put blueberries, raspberries or strawberries or bananas, you have them already chopped up and you sprinkle them on top. And then when you flip the pancake, it cooks in and they should raise up a little bit. And the key is not to overbeat your batter. Do not overheat your batter.
Do not overbeat your batter. What does that mean?
It means you're taking all the air out of it that makes it fluffy.
Oh, so how do I, what's the appropriate amount of beating for my batter?
Well, where it's, all the flour, you know, it's kind of lumpy. It's not necessarily, you don't want big chunks of, you know, quarter-sized pieces of flour, just flour. But you see that there's still a little white, and it all cooks out. But yeah, you just don't overbeat it. You don't want it so smooth that there's no lumps in it. You want your pancake batter to be a little lumpy. You have to trial error to get the right consistency for you.
Okay. All right. So we want it so that it is mixed, but we're not, after it hits that point where we're mixing, all we're doing is taking air out of it.
You're making the pancake flat.
Hmm.
So it'll just spread out over and you get these thin pancakes.
Right.
Now, if you're going to do pigs in a blanket, then you want them a little thinner. Because you're going to put a piece of sausage link in there and then roll the pancake around the sausage. And that, my friends, is called pigs in a blanket.
Pigs in a blanket. And if you're going to eat them, you got to have a lot of syrup. Okay, you can't.
Oh God! And don't forget the butter.
Yeah, butter and syrup. You can't have dry pigs in a blanket. The pigs like to be wet.
Yes, they do. They always wallow in it.
They wallow.
They love to wallow in it.
They love to wallow in it. Another email. Can I ask a question about the ear? What's the level of damage that you have to have visible before you go to the hat? Yeah. What is the level of damage that you have to go? Now, for instance, when you were, because you have some pretty stylish caps, toques, if you will. What?
Well, toques. The only reason I would cover my ear is if it needed to be covered, like, you know, if I had surgery on my ear or something. This was just a mole removal.
Oh, mole
removal. So it just had a monster bandage on top, because I take Coumadin, so I was bleeding like a, you know what. And so I had to soak up all the blood that was still going
everywhere
last night. And I had to change it once. But otherwise, it doesn't matter, man. It's just, you know, you're gorgeous whether your ear's got a big bandage on it or not.
No, you're really not. What is the point where you look and say, I need to put a toque on, cover that ear? What?
When you think you wrote somebody out, like, you're not looking at it, you could give a damn. That's just a matter of whether you want people staring at you or not. and if it's the middle of the summer and you've got a stocking cap on, they're still going to look at you.
So if it catches your eye, then you go cap, and if it doesn't catch your eye, then you don't?
No, you don't.
Okay, so it's got to catch your eye. That's the only thing. If you look at it and go, yeah, that ain't right, then you go get the tow.
Then you do the appropriate, whether it's one of my Irish hats that I can call the thug hats.
Wait, whoa, why do Irish have to be... Why do Irish have to be thugs?
That's the name of the hat I buy. Because it comes down on one side, that side can be pulled down to cover your ear. So there, that's what I did yesterday. It was cold enough to wear them.
Here's a couple messages for
you. Hats.
Here's a couple messages.
Actually, they're Irish linen.
All right, stop it. Enough of Irish hat talk. Here's a couple of messages for you. Here from one of my buddies. I make homemade waffles, and I didn't know about overbeating. That's a good tip. And then from Texas, in cooking, less is better.
Yes.
Sounds like a broad generalization, but okay. I think
cooking the omelet less is better.
Okay.
Is the way I'm going to interpret this.
Well, you know,
yes, you don't want to overcook an omelet because a dry egg omelet sucks. You have to have a little moisture, and don't be a wussy about it. Believe me, it's just like cooking fish until there's no moisture in it. It's dry. You might as well eat cardboard.
Whoa.
It's the same thing with eggs. Whoa. Don't overcook them unless you're going to put them between two pieces of white bread and put ketchup on it and have a fried egg sandwich.
All right, let me ask you a question. Is there any difference between pancake batter, waffle batter? Is there anything different? Do you treat waffle batter different?
I can't pull it up right now. But one thing I wanted to say about what I used to do with the Blue Parrot with my waffles, I would put the waffle batter in the iron, and then I would sprinkle pre-cooked chopped bacon on top of the waffle, the raw part, and then put the lid down and then flip it over, you know, like you do with the waffle iron. And then it had the bacon inside it. And then I would have a grated Swiss cheese on that when it came out with the butter, grated Swiss cheese, and then lots of syrup.
Grated Swiss cheese on a waffle? What the hell,
God,
man?
Hey man, it was the 80s. let me just tell you, I was way ahead of my time with my omelet making and my frittata making and my waffle making.
Well. All right, I know you've got to go put your toque on and get on and get the physical therapy. What's your physical therapy for? Your ear or
cardio rehab? I go Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays from 11:15 to 12:15. They hook you up to monitors, and then they put you on a treadmill and then a bike, and then they check your vitals as you work out for an hour. Yeah. And then, then you go home. And that's all part of my insurance coverage, being in Medicare. And I get, I think, 3 months worth of this, or no, 2 months, on them, and then they cut me loose, and I'm on my own again.
Got it. Okay.
Just checking, seeing how the juices are flowing after the surgery.
Yeah, no, my point is that you have to be on time for that, and if you're late or I keep you, then I'm going to hear about it from Miss B, and I ain't going there, okay? It's like getting in trouble with somebody. It's like getting in trouble with somebody else's mom, okay? Not really where you want to go.
Next week we're going to do something special. I just don't know what it is yet.
All right, well, you figure it out.
I might be doing it from my car, driving my friend to the airport. Who knows? But we both ran out of money in Switzerland at the same time. He became a baker, and he's been a good friend. He's coming back to visit us.
Oh, that's awesome.
Anyway, have a good weekend, everyone. I hope your day is great, Mac, and your weekend's better.
Well, there you
go. And Auburn plus 3.5 over LSU. I think I lost that one. Didn't LSU win?
LSU beat them. Congratulations. Do you have another lead pipe lock this week? You got about 12 seconds.
Not even close, man.
All right. He's out. He's going to physical therapy. All right, sir. Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. There you have it. The chef here on a Friday. The, F-18 guy and Mike are both foodies. Who knew? Exactly. More of All Marine Radio on a Friday. That's what it is. Yep. A volleyball game today and then volleyball tournament tomorrow. That's always exciting. More of that program coming up next here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Matt.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.